Hi, I'm Karin Anderson, the host of Life Now. Welcome to Life Now, the radio show devoted to living well in this life rather than preparing for the next. Our task is to probe and extract where boldness rears its promising head and to uplift those moments where integrity, compassion, and justice work their way into people's living and loving. A challenging feat, we know, but one worth aspiring to. I was intrigued and shocked at the same time. I got it in the mail, unsolicited, but I found myself flipping through the pages. Was a magazine called Shop. Yep, you heard me right. It came in my mailbox one day, and I was strangely lured to those slick, heavy pages, while nose-piercing wafts of perfume floated from the rich text. Each page contained either an ad or a detailed account of the 10 best beaded handbags of 2007, or the alluring, frivolous fantasy of wearing jeans that could shape any body with a bum of steel for just, I don't know, $100 to $500 a pop. I reached the end and felt sick. An entire magazine dedicated to shopping. You know, if you look to the models and actors posing for the latest hot item in the mag, you'd think they were the happiest people in the world. And so, for a brief moment, I wondered if it was possible that they knew something I didn't, that shopping could really make me just ecstatically gleeful. Somehow, though, I doubted it. Over a year ago now, I pledged publicly to not buy any new clothes for myself for the next 6 years. I did it to save on my spending and buy secondhand clothes instead, so that my husband and I could afford to buy a green living roof for our house. And the only way we could afford it would mean a little sacrifice, in particular on my part. You see, I like clothes. I like clothes a lot. And I could spend more than I need to on items that I convince myself I need, even when I stay within a prescribed budget. So this 6-year stint was going to take for me willpower, endurance, and creativity. I am a year and a half into it now. And I've pretty much found everything I need at secondhand stores, and my grandmother actually was kind enough to buy me 2 new jackets, but the rest is new to me, not new to the human body. And yet, that shopping lure strikes me every now and then. I found myself in the mall with my husband, as he never buys clothes unless, you know, I point out that he has a hole in the elbow or his collar is yellow, so I'd end up dragging him to a store. I'll say to him when we're there, "Here, try this on." I pick out everything for him. Half an hour later at the mall, this last time we went, he is buying 2 new sweaters. Meanwhile, in between fittings, I walk through the holiday dresses. And I am drawn to a beautiful new dress, which really would look so nice on me, and I didn't have anything else like it, and, you know, my commitment was melting in front of me. Plus, you know, come on, I've gone a year and a half, and I start to reason out how much else everyone else has spent in the last year, and one dress. What was the big deal? So I tried it on, and I liked it. Then I walked out of the fitting room, and I was arguing with myself. In front of me were 2 teenage boys with their mothers checking out. Each of them had a stack of clothes, being paid for by their mother's gold card. At their feet lay 3 big bags of clothes with teenage labels adorning the side. And you know, in that moment, the dress felt like an extravagance that I didn't need to justify, so it got hung back on the rack. In truth, whoever would have thought I was rescued by a 16-year-old boy with a schlumpy attitude and bad acne. But I was. Truth is, I think for most of us, the high of buying something usually lasts for 12 hours. You know, maybe 24 at the most. Then it fades away. The thrill of the item, the utility of the purchase, the next best thing presents itself to us and our attention is easily swayed. I have found that shopping is not the divine calling to happiness it might profess itself to be. And I must confess that this time of year I find most confounding with this as well. 'Cause there are ads everywhere telling you that your wife will love you more than she did yesterday if you buy her that Zales diamond. Or, from my perspective, you could get your spouse that new 50-inch high-definition Pure Vision plasma television for a mere, $2,700, and he will undoubtedly bring you coffee in bed for a year in gratitude for your thoughtfulness. You will have met his every need. He will be able to watch the Steelers on a 50-inch screen. Coffee in bed every day, just for getting the guy a TV. You see, I get confused sometimes at Christmas time, and I start wondering if I'm missing out on some secret happiness by not buying into this big consumerism bit, and people really maybe are joyfully walking through the aisles on Black Friday, propelled by their generosity of spirit, engaging themselves in finding the perfect gift to illustrate their love for their honey. I start wondering again. So this year, I interviewed two brave souls who got up at 5 a.m. to be at the store at 6 a.m. to see what the experience was like. This interview is with Beth Fisher, who went this year to Target in search of a camera and Christmas presents for her kids, hoping to get that magic combination of cheap, generosity assured, and meaningful purchases all together. Here's what Beth learned. So I'm talking to Beth Fisher right now because she told me that she went shopping on Black Friday, and I'm just curious. I want to hear about it because she got up at 6 a.m. Didn't you?
Actually, I set my alarm for that earlier, but it didn't go off. I was actually going to try to get there sooner because it was before work.
Really?
Yeah, I've never done that before, but it seemed a good opportunity.
So you got up at what time?
I probably got up about 5 because I had to get ready for work, and then I was going to hit the stores and go to work.
Right.
Which was ridiculous. When I got there, I realized with all the people, it was unbelievable. I probably got to Target in Henrietta about 6 o'clock. Uh-huh. And there were just cars everywhere. I mean, every light, there were just tons of people. So I'm in the parking lot at Target, and everybody's jockeying around for a parking spot, and this big SUV was in front of me waiting for a parking spot and just backed up and hit my car.
That was
the first thing, and I was like, because my car's really little,
right,
so I couldn't see it. And so, no, there was no damage or whatever, so okay, fine. And then I found a parking spot, and I went in, and it was just unbelievable, the crowds. I mean, people were parking, like, in the next store way over, across the road, and, like, crossing the road to get to Target.
No way.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So
that's a huge lot, the one at
It's a huge lot, yeah. So you go in, and there's a TV van out front, too, which was also made it kind of surreal. And lines everywhere and mobs of people with shopping carts trying to win their way through all the clothes and stuff because you couldn't walk through the aisles. And so I made my way to the back of the store, and the line went from the register. All the registers were open. And the line went all the way to the back of the store, and people were just waiting. It didn't even look like the line was moving. I mean, they were just waiting with carts piled up, with people trying to squeeze by them. Everybody was in a rushing mode. It was really weird. So I got to the camera counter. Well, I couldn't even get to the camera counter. I got to where that usually is, and there were just so many people in the way, and I just kind of freaked out and left. I couldn't take it. So I just left. I just went back to my car and left. It was too weird.
What I find interesting about that is you said you got there about 6 o'clock and they opened at 6. So people, but you said you were late. By the time you parked, you must have gotten in around 6:30 or so. And by that time, there are already people all the way to the back of the store in the line with their carts full.
Yeah.
So in half an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. because by the time I left, got back to my car, which was parked pretty far away, and left, it was like 6:45. So, yeah, that many people were there. I mean, there were people as you're walking into the store leaving with their piles of stuff, you know, their, you know, going back to their cars.
Right.
So, yeah, it was just jammed. I've never seen anything like it.
Jammed, and then you also said earlier when I talked to you that it wasn't like a joyful moment for all those people there, necessarily.
No, it wasn't. Didn't feel like holiday spirit. It felt like everybody was really trying to, you know, get what they wanted to get and get where they needed to go, and pretty stressed out, actually.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles
will be out of
sight.
Okay, so Beth's experience wasn't so great. But the other person I interviewed was Mary Stamper. Yet as her tale unfolded, I realized it mirrored Beth's. Suffocating crowds, snake-like lines, disgruntled shoppers, anxiety high. In fact, I recorded Mary too, but geez, it was the exact same story, and I was shocked that they hadn't checked in with each other before I spoke with them individually. So after talking to these two, I was reaffirmed. Holiday happiness didn't come from getting the perfect gift or spending hours waiting in line to check out. The truth is, in all the conversations I've ever had with people, even if they do feel they found one perfect gift, they still end up buying gifts for someone out of obligation rather than affection or sincerity. And they can't say, with all confidence, that their generosity of spirit and meaning were met in the gift exchange process. Joy, really, for most of us, when it comes to gift giving, is still somewhat elusive. So where is that magic power during the holidays? What does it take to kick in the holiday spirit? How does one lean into that Christmas hymn, "Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy," oh, you know, you get the picture. So I hate to say I have the answer because I don't, but I have one answer. And all came about one Christmas holiday, one magical night. But I'm getting ahead of myself. When I was a child, day after Thanksgiving was steeped in ritual. You see, every year my family would travel to Chicago for the holiday festivities. Our tour was always the same. We'd tromp up and down Michigan Avenue, admiring store windows with animated mechanical dolls that served as actors for the narrated holiday story. We'd wait in line for 2 hours to sit under the 3-story tree at Marshall Fields and enjoy a formal lunch. Then we'd get to go sit on Santa's lap to discuss the finer points of our list. And finally, off to the Berghoff for dinner. That day always held magic, mostly because of my dime-laden mittens. See, in the morning, my dad would give my sister and me each a handful of dimes, which I kept in my mittens so I could tinker with them as we walked in anticipation of finding another one of them. Salvation Army Christmas buckets. At almost every corner, familiar red cans awaited, and I marveled in watching my dimes swirl their way to the quarter-sized slot and plunk in to rest amid other dime-sized donations. At the time, I knew nothing about Salvation Army theology, only that they worked for the homeless and destitute. And they became my symbol of generosity for the season, albeit bucket-sized. As an adult, I often felt an odd pull to ring the bell myself. So one year I gave in. I called up the lieutenant at the local Salvation Army and asked enthusiastically if they were in need of help. They were. I was given 2 assignments. And I could not wait to get my hands on that little tinkly bell. The first assignment was a busy street corner with a bookstore and a coffee shop on either side. I rang my ding-a-lingy bell in 10-degree weather with glee, stamping my feet periodically to stay warm. My smart bucket swung slightly in the breeze. It was an experience just as I had hoped. People asked me if I was warm enough. A couple brought me coffee. Many smiled and simply wished me happy holidays as they passed. And I marveled at the parade of dime donors and that familiar plunk of change that followed.
It's coming on Christmas. They're cutting down trees, putting up reindeer.
The second assignment was at a mall across from JCPenney's. Once again eager, I itched to start my ring-a-dinging. Woo, that bell! The lieutenant arrived to set up my bucket, and my hands reached for the bell. No bell, he explained. The mall owners have complained. No bell. You get this. He handed me a sign. Now, I want you to imagine this. The sign was attached to a long dowel. On the top of the dowel, two pieces of paper were stapled together over the center of the stick, and on one side it read ding, and the other side read dong. Instead of ringing, I now had to flip a sign that read ding dong. My little bucket instantly lost its tingling. My enthusiasm waned. I flipped in silent motion. It seemed absurd, but I went to work. People pushed past each other, mired in that Christmas hubbub that leans towards frustration, not joy. Then, they'd spot me. Their faces would contort, scrunching up into laughter, and that uncomfortable feeling when you're embarrassed and humored by someone at the same time. Come on, we all know it. And they would often throw in some dimes and say, "Happy holidays," barely able to stifle an awkward yet justifiable smirk. I fought hard not to feel like the sign was projecting my mental state to the mall community. For 4 hours, I flipped. The sign, that is. 10 minutes before I was to quit, this fellow in black cowboy boots and a 10-gallon hat walked up to me and laughed. He was full out chuckles, bent over hysterically laughing. I stood taller, flipping my sign with increased vigor, and I couldn't tell where he was going with this. When he finally stood up for air, his eyes were smiling, so I hoped for no malicious intent. But I also was ready to kick him in the shins for his reaction to me and my now stupid sign. Then he said, "I must say, I've never seen a sign like that before. Anybody that stands with the sign that says ding dong must be duly rewarded." He reached into his back pocket and retrieved his wallet. Crisp bills lay neatly in uniform order. And he ran through the fives, tens, and twenties and got to a row of fifties. He pulled one out. A 50. He neatly folded the bill and squeezed it into the bucket designed for coin donors. Nodding, he smiled right into my eyes and muttered, "Well, I never." And he continued on through the mall with laughter that hung captive in the air like lingering pipe smoke. I, on the other hand, began to turn that sign with a renewed vigor. I looked at each passerby with a new attitude, whether they snickered or smiled, donated or not. I now felt strangely in awe of my ding-dong sign. And I was unabashedly proud that I was stupid enough to stand in a mall tenaciously flipping a sign, waiting for humor and generosity to awaken someone's humdrum spirit. Waiting for it to finally dawn on me that my gifts of generosity and time needed to lose their pretenses in order for any true generosity to occur. Waiting, just to discover that this season can still thrill and surprise, and waiting for magic, only to find that red buckets held it all the time, even without the ding-a-ling. Happy holidays, friends. May you too find that elusive spark by giving away a piece of yourself to needs greater than your own. this holiday. Get a little giddy. Lean into your do-gooder, I'm helping the common good inclination, and shine from the inside out. You've been listening to Life Now Radio. This show has been brought to you by the First Unitarian Church of Rochester with some help from the First Universalist Church of Rochester as well. Life Now Radio's premise is about living well in this life rather than preparing for the next. We're grateful for the generous support from the Unitarian Universalist Funding Program. And if you'd like to find out more about Life Now Radio or about Unitarian Universalism, we invite you to check out our website at lifenowradio.org. Better yet, I invite you to come to church. I know it may feel like a stretch sometimes to actually get here or get up in the morning and change your routine, but I guarantee you that once you get here, you'll find a community that offers to you hope, healing, and occasional heresy. So take the time, get out of bed, and come. We have services at 9:30 and 11:15.